agenda is here. Today, excuse me, today on the agenda, we have issue 224, Sandra Hawk's syntax spec review, and then David Booth's Jason LD 1.0 syntax spec review, and then issue 223, Jason LD options, base versus app base, and then issue 226, expansion and compaction, the expansion and compaction explanation. Any updates or changes to the agenda?
Nope.
Marcus, you're up to scribe. Would you mind scribing today?
No, I can do that.
I'll scribe for you whenever you need to talk. Okay, first up is issue 224, Sandra Hawk's Jason LD syntax spec review. And actually, you know what, why don't I go ahead and, since you're the one that read this, Marcus, why don't you go through and cover the things that you feel need to be covered to check off these last final checkboxes, and I'll scribe for you and try to capture all this stuff.
Okay, sure. So most of the feedback was just editorial art, I think. But there were a couple of points which I think we should discuss together before we do any changes. So one is, for example, in the introduction, we kind of paraphrased the linked data principles to explain what JSON-LD is about, and Sandro said that he doesn't really like that. So we should either reference something or remove that part or rewrite it or I don't know. I think... Go ahead.
Well, I guess my concern is that we're paraphrasing to give people a quick introduction to it, so perhaps we could figure out some other wording that explains it a little more easily. Specifically, I think his problem had to do with, let me scroll up to where that is. I mean, his comment is correct, or he says, I think they provide information about the name thing, or maybe you said that, which is true. They don't provide information about the name. But I think that's really the only correction we need to make. I think it's important to say that. I think it's important to say that up front, just so that people have kind of a quick idea of what linked data is about.
Yeah, I agree. In some form, we should include it there because it's really what JSON-LD is all about. So.
Right.
I can sort of see Sandra's perspective. I mean, if you come at it as this is another JSON or RDF serialization, then there's no other serialization which feels the need to go into that kind of detail. The exception, perhaps, is HTML. I'm not trying to think that we do anything like that with RDFA.
I think JSON-LD is slightly different in that this is the first time we're kind of talking about linked data first instead of RDF first. Most of the other serializations are just, you know, the assumption is that you've read RDF concepts and you know all the background information there. Whereas JSON-LD doesn't make that assumption. It doesn't assume that you know or care about RDF when you start reading the document. So it's kind of like an introduction to even the core concepts of linked data, which quite possibly these JSON developers are not familiar with.
So yeah, I understand that, but I just don't know that the RDF group is sympathetic to that viewpoint. And in the past, I think they suggested that, well, maybe that's the role of a primer. And I think that we're trying to avoid needing to primer by being able to put in everything that's in there. So it's just a matter of communication. My feeling is that if it's non-normative, then it really shouldn't matter. But if there was something, if we were repeating what was said elsewhere, then a reference to it probably would be adequate. But I don't know that you're going to find that. Yeah, I can't think where else that would come from.
Yeah, I find it problematic when you end up referencing later parts of the document in the introduction, in an introductory section. And we shouldn't be repeating something verbatim. We should just be kind of trying to summarize. But in any case, I think there's a way for us to rewrite that section so that it's less abrasive on RDF folks.
Yeah.
I'd rather we do that than remove it or reference something. Rather.
It sounds like a good idea then.
Okay. Let's see. Marcus, do you want to continue down the list?
Yeah. The next point was about the design goals section. Well, he said, or previously it said, a number of design goals were established before the creation of this markup language, and he said that the history doesn't matter. So as a quick fix, I changed it to use present tense. So JSON only satisfies the following design goals. But the question is if we really want to keep that section, or if we put that information into the introduction, or does it provide any value to say, to have a specific section? So that's the question there.
I think it's important. That section is important. I understand that Sandro doesn't feel that the history is that important. I kind of think it is important, but I can see how most people wouldn't care about it. So I think that the way you've reworded it is good, and it's what we want. I would have an issue with us removing that section because we're kind of trying to say, look, these are the overall goals of JSON LD, and just say it up front so that people understand what we're trying to accomplish with the syntax. I think it would be difficult to move it up into the introduction. Because moving it up into the introduction would make the introduction even, larger, and people might miss some of the more important things, such as, what linked data is about. So I think you did the right thing, and the change you did was what we wanted to make.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Okay. Then so while there were a couple of examples where I couldn't really locate what he meant, but that's a different story, which we should talk with Sandra. Then one was we have that feature to interpret ordinary JSON as JSON LD quite late in the spec. And he said he would have expected it much earlier and after where we talk about remote context, so immediately after that. And that's in basic concepts under the context. It's one of the, actually, it's the first section in basic concepts. So either we include it there or as another subsection after that section, or somewhere towards the beginning. And I kind of like that because I think it's an important feature for adoption, and a lot of people would like to switch to JSON LD, or they already have JSON, which could be transformed to JSON LD with just that link header. But we discussed that before and some people disagreed, and that's the reason why it's still down there in advanced concepts somewhere.
I'm on the fence about this. I do feel like it's a fairly advanced concept because I don't think very many web developers know about using link headers. But I think it's putting it that early in the document is a bit too, it's too, you know, it's a bit too premature, but if other people feel strongly about it, I'm fine with it.
I think it could probably be done without talking about the link header, although perhaps it means referencing the API, because you can take a normal JSON document and apply a context when you're doing expansion, say, and get the results. The link header is a more advanced feature because it has to do with, you know, HTTP envelopes, things like that. But in terms of being able to consider that you could take some JSON and use a context that's not directly stated within there, that does make a point early on that, hey, look, maybe the JSON that I'm using already just could be interpreted this way if I use this context.
Yeah, except, I mean, Sandro asked specifically, I was expecting the next example to use a link header.
Yeah, I agree. I think the link header is an advanced feature and should go later on. But if we're reading between the lines, if what you expect there is that it's a way to be able to take existing JSON and treat it as JSON-LD by providing somehow another context, then I think that is something that is worth having further up front.
Yeah, I agree. I'm wondering, I don't know how that would look. Maybe whoever deals with this issue can try to take a make an attempt at it and point people to the text. My concern is that if we put a reference to the API that early in the document, we don't do that anywhere else in the document, I don't think, except at the very, very end.
We might not need to actually put it to the put a reference to the API in there, but we could just say that a JSON-LD processor can be provided a context alongside the document, without getting into the details and the specific references to do that. I mean, it's sort of a non-normative.
So maybe we can say that and then just link to the, you know, example 29 or something like that.
Yeah.
Or, and then maybe even link to the API.
Yeah, or for more information.
In two different ways. Yeah, for
right.
More information, read, you know, the section about providing a context to the API or adding a HTTP link header.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds. That would be. Yeah, I think that would be a good idea.
Because then that's a paragraph and a version of example 5 that where you separate the context into a different document from the body.
Yeah. Marcus, Dave, does that sound reasonable?
Sounds fine with me.
So what, I mean, the example, what would it look like? Or is
we
it
might
really
not even
prose?
Have an example. It might not be an example. It might just be prose. We might
okay.
Show example 5 and say, you know, maybe in a note, hey, you know what, you can also specify context by using the HTTP link header, C-section, blah, 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 or by providing a context via the JSON-LD API, C-section, blah, 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 the JSON-LD API.
Yeah, the example might just then have two pieces in it. The one was the context, and the other would be just the three properties.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that sounds good. I think that avoids putting HTTP link headers right in anyone's face who's not familiar with that.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I would probably be fine with that.
Okay. Okay, then let's go ahead and move on to the next one.
The next one was about relative IRIs. So after example 6, I think the numbers changed slightly. So that's section 5.2 IRIs, and we start talking about absolute and relative IRIs, but we never show how a relative IRI is used but Sandra proposed to include an example showing that. That might, well, at the first sight, I thought that's trivial, but then looking a bit closer at it, it isn't actually, because we talk about absolute RIs and in the key position, and using it with add ID is just to say an expanded RI definition. So that's not really the same. And if we would have an example with relative RIs there,
I think you could do that in after example 9, where we're referencing Manu's homepage. We could say, for instance, if this was used on a personal profile page, you know, that was located at, say, manusporny.org/about or something like that, then you could have a document which referenced the homepage using just slash. And that would use, it's sort of be better perhaps if it's the other way around, but they're both basically relative IRIs. And that would be a way to show in which case the homepage could be interpreted, could be expanded to what it is now if the document location was sort of in the same realm.
We just have to be a bit careful so that we don't give the wrong impression that properties will be interpreted as relative RIs as well, if there isn't a matching term or if it isn't an absolute RI.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'd need to say that anyway, right?
Well, I guess what Mark is saying is that we don't have to go into that detail now, and this is still early in the document, and having to go into that sort of detail might confuse people.
Well, but we introduced the concept of a relative IRI, and then we never actually use it.
Yeah.
The only other way to do it would be to put the relative IRI bit down into an advanced section. But that would seem like we're just sort of expanding it for no good reason.
Yeah. I'd be fine with covering both of them in this section. I just think we have to be very careful about how we do it. I think Marcus has a good point.
Well,
so Marcus,
but
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say we are more explicit later on about what can be a relative IRI. And we don't necessarily need to be bloody explicit in this particular section. We just show an example of an IRI. We can leave it to the, or we can just say, you know, see the appendix for rules where relative IRIs can be used.
Right.
Yeah, we can just have a sentence in there that says there are some restrictions on relative IRIs. See the appendix for that.
Well,
do you actually have a profile document, Mana?
No. Probably put one up.
Yeah, you need one just for this.
Yeah.
If you do that, then you can put some.
I started working on one, and then I realized that it's just going to mirror my LinkedIn page, and then I start thinking about it being really cool if we could just pull the LinkedIn JSON and convert it directly into like RDFA and JSON-LA, and then I'm overwhelmed by the problem and don't do any of it.
The perfect is the enemy of the good.
Right, exactly.
I did the same thing with GitHub, too. So yeah, I can get all of this information off of GitHub.
Yeah. Okay, so what are we doing with this thing? We're just going to give an example of a relative IRI and say, for more information on using relative IRI, see this section, X.
That's my suggestion.
Which section are we referencing then? Is it actually anywhere explained in detail apart the grammar?
I would just say let's reference the grammar.
Well, yeah. Not so sure that's a good idea, because you're referencing from the very beginning to the grammar, and in the grammar there is no information. There is a bunch of must and must not statements, but you can't really find out where relative RIs can be used.
It seems like we really should have a little subsection in the documents explaining where relative RIs can and cannot be used.
Well, it is spread out. You know, for instance, you know, actually, that is the... Oh, I guess this is in... No, it's just in the grammar that I'm saying that.
Well, is there any reason we shouldn't just explain relative IRIs just in a paragraph somewhere in the document and just point to that?
I guess this is the section to do it in then.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, well then we'll explain relative IRIs in a little more detail in the paragraph in the section, and then we don't have to reference anything. Or at that point, we can reference the grammar and say, for, you know, details on where you can and can't use relative IRIs, see the grammar. But again, I have the same concerns that Marcus has about doing that.
Yeah, so I think that we don't, you could say the same about everything we talk about. For details, see the grammar. We don't do that. So I don't think we need to here. We can just say, you know, relative IRIs are useful for when you're representing a value, not appropriate for use as properties.
Yep, sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, what's up next?
Next up is... Next up is the question when we drop or when we ignore properties. So,
are you skipping over the notion of the extract triples and quads? Or is that, where are we in the comment?
It's example 8, the point over that.
Yeah.
Right, okay, yeah. Triples and quads.
So sometimes we say that, or we are a bit vague on that, so sometimes we say when processed properties are absolute, properties might be ignored because they don't expand to unambiguous identifiers. And for Sandra, it was a bit confusing to understand how that ends up in triples, or what actually produces triples and what's just discarded, or if the things that are discarded are basically just like comments, as he put it. But I can't... Okay, that's that sentence. Under example 7, JSON keys that do not expand to an absolute IRI are ignored or removed in some cases by the JSON LD API. However, JSON keys that do not include a mapping in the context are still considered valid expressions in JSON LD documents. The keys just don't expand to unambiguous identifiers.
So I guess I'm confused as to what Sandra is confused about.
Well, I think that there's other places where he goes into suggesting that we provide some brief summary of the various different algorithms in here so that we can talk about triple generation and reading and writing. So this might be in line with that general comment.
I think he's
mostly confused about the fact that we say in some cases, but we don't enumerate or don't explain those cases where that happens.
Well, basically, it's the case where anything which is interpreted as an IRI does not expand to an absolute IRI, considering document-based.
You mean properties?
Yeah, so And I guess it's just properties. Yes.
I think we just need to reorder the way that this is written in the spec. I think we should probably start off by saying certain keys don't expand to unambiguous identifiers in JSON-LD documents. And they're allowed to be in those documents, but they'll be removed by the API because they don't generate any. I don't know. We don't want to say triples here, but they don't generate any triples. I think that's what's confusing here is we say that there are keys that do not expand to an absolute IRI and they're ignored. However, they're valid. So I can see how that's confusing to someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the fact that we're trying to claim that it's okay to do that, even though it basically violates the data model. Maybe we need to something other than it's okay.
Well, we could say they are ignored when the document is being processed.
Or removed.
Yeah, well, ignored and removed are two different things.
Well, they are removed, though, when you expand.
I agree. I'm saying we can't say that we can't just say they're ignored, they're removed.
Well, it depends how you look at the process. If you say the result of an operation is a different document, then they are just ignored from the input document. If you say you're modifying the document, then they are removed, yeah. But normally when you extract something like triples from a document, you just ignore the rest. Like in RDFA, you ignore most of the HTML, but just extract that part. But you wouldn't say that the rest of the HTML is removed in that case, for example.
Even more relevant might be the way we deal with rel, link relations that aren't specifically terms. They're ignored.
Is there a way for us to just say that other processors that are not linked data processors or JSON-LD processors might use this information, but a JSON-LD processor will remove it?
Say that again, Dave.
Is there a way for us to just say that other processors that are not JSON-LD or linked data processors might use this information, but a JSON-LD processor will remove it?
Actually, remove at this point implies that we're actually modifying the document, which isn't what we're doing. We're really just dropping it.
Or interpreting it.
Well, yeah, do we have a way of saying it'll be treated like comments? Or we could just say it'll be ignored by JSON-LD processing.
I'm wondering what do we say in the HTML plus RDFA with regard to that?
Is that in core? Yeah.
RDFA
I think
core.
So. Yeah. But we don't. It's kind of just assumed. You just assume that the HTML data doesn't move over. It's only the things that the processing rules talk about that are moved over into triples. Everything else is pretty much dropped. And we could say it's ignored. We could say it's removed.
Yeah, can we just say any keys that don't expand to unambiguous identifiers will be ignored by a JSON-LD processor?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think thinking about it more, it's we could say removed, but let's not. We don't need to go that far. I don't think to make the point. We just say it's ignored, and then we don't raise any questions about modification to the original document or things being removed. I think people tend to become a little more alarmed when you say things are removed than when you say that they're ignored. I think the correct word to use is ignored in this case.
Yeah. We probably need, instead of saying unambiguous identifiers, probably absolute IRI.
Oh, that's dangerous too, since we do output relative IRIs.
But they expand to absolute IRIs.
Well, as long as we say that that do expand to absolute IRIs. I'm just saying there could be some confusion there if you just say relative IRIs.
Yeah, but if we start if we say unambiguous identifier, then we're going to have to describe what an unambiguous identifier is.
Yeah, I know, and then we'll get in a debate with the RDF working group over what that means.
Okay, so what are we doing here? We're using the word ignore. I don't think we should talk about triples and quads. I realize that that's very natural for someone coming from the RDF world, but that's not the target audience here.
Well, we talk about the data model being a graph where the nodes and links are represented by absolute IRIs, or by IRIs anyway. And in this sense, these really are not treated as IRIs by the processor.
What if we say properties that do not expand to an IRI are not linked data and thus ignored when being processed?
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. Maybe adding, you know, relative to the document.
Well, we could leave that relative absolute out if we just say expand to IRIs.
Yeah, I'm just worried about the use that Mana's been promoting about being able to use relative IRIs for things within the statement of the document. So in which case, it would also suggest that those values should be dropped.
We're not mentioning absolute or relative. We're just saying IRIs.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that probably works.
Yep. Okay. So let's do that for this one. Okay. Moving on.
Okay. Next point was not a fan of this paragraph. Okay, that was to be able to, that's node identifiers, so section 5.3, the introduction. We say, in order to be able to externally reference a node, it has to be identified. It has to have an unambiguous identifier, and that unambiguous identifier has to be an IRI. And Sandra wasn't a big fan of that paragraph because I don't know why.
Well, it implies that there's something wrong with using B-nodes. And I think the issue with B-nodes is that they are, it's not that they aren't externally useful, because they are, but only in reference to something else. So when I'm working with the guys at Wikia, you know, why can't we use B nodes for all of this stuff? It's because you can't. There's no way to ever get to it except indirectly.
But this section has nothing to do with blank node identifiers. It's about normal node identifiers.
Yeah, and I don't think we should remove this. I think there's a lot of good information in that paragraph, and removing it doesn't.
No, it says nodes should have a dereferenceable identifier.
Should, not must.
Well, but I'm even not. That's very strong. That's much stronger than RDF goes. It's basically saying that you should not use things that don't have IRIs.
No. It's saying those two things are very different. Saying something you should do something is not the same as saying you should not do something else. So saying you should label a node with and really that's what linked data is about. Like if you want to produce really good linked data, you should be using IRIs to label your nodes. Now, there are exceptions to the case where you use blank node identifiers, but I don't think that we really need to go into that in this paragraph.
No, I just think that's the crux of what the problem people are having with this are, is that it's going much further than anything else in RDF says.
I guess I don't see what this paragraph, leaving this paragraph in the spec, is going to result in, what negative consequence is going to come as a result of it.
Well, what's the purpose of having this paragraph in the document?
I have to open up the spec and look at it in context. But
I mean, it's the introduction.
I put something in IRC.
JSON LD documents may also contain descriptions of other nodes.
I put something in IRC that deleted part of the sentence there that might make it sound a little less strong and be more to the point about talking about data being truly linked. If we just take out the latter part of the IRIs or a fundamental concept of linked data sentence and just go into the next sentence, it might sound less strong, but still get the point across.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
What about the last sentence, the one I just pasted? Because just because you label it with an IRI doesn't really mean that you can. It doesn't tell an application that it can fetch it. It's just an identifier, it's not a locator, in the RDF sense at least.
Yeah, because it doesn't tell the application that it can fetch it.
We can just drop that sentence.
You could say, if the IRI is also a URL, then a node can use it.
Yeah, but you have no way to figure that out.
No. Well.
Well, we're talking about identifying nodes, right? You do have a way to figure that out. You know if an IRI is a URL. At least you know an HTTP URL.
Well, you fetch it.
You try
to dereference it, and if you're successful, then it is.
Yep.
We could just put in many cases, comma, and then put associating an IRI. Just put that at the beginning of the sentence.
Yeah.
What if you just rephrase it and saying, instead of it tells an application, it allows an application to fetch it?
Well, you're still going to put it may allow an application.
Or may allow an application, yes.
Right.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. I'm kind of bike shedding the hell out of this paragraph, but I'm fine with what Dave put in there, and I agree with Marcus that we should probably rephrase that second sentence. And I think there are multiple ways to do that in an acceptable way.
Okay.
Node allows an application to fetch the resource associated with that, right?
Yeah, just make sure you don't have the extra S on there.
Yeah, may allow. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, okay, that looks good.
Good.
Okay, are we done with this one? So we're not getting rid of the sentence while we're rewording it? Or
yeah.
We're not getting rid of the paragraph and rewording it? Okay. But
yeah. Then the next point is about the sections being marked as normative or non-normative, and I think there was a recent change in respec because it basically dropped all that this section is normative labels. It just adds the labels if something is marked as non-normative. I haven't had time yet to dig that up, but I would talk to loving about that.
So I'm unclear. So a dance concept is marked normative because it's not marked as being informative. And then section
no.
five is marked as being, is section five marked as being informative? No.
The thing is that some sections are marked neither as normative nor as non-normative, so they are not marked at all. And I think there was a change in respec because I checked our source code and the classes are there, but respec doesn't generate those markers anymore for normative sections. It just does it for non-normative sections.
So section six says that it is normative, and you're saying it. Well, it so respec is doing that now, or is that because
if you specifically mention it?
So it says class normative.
The thing in section six is that we manually included that. So there is
right.
something like this in the source code. And we put that manually, otherwise, or normally, respec should take care of that.
Okay, well, I mean, so the solution is pretty straightforward. We either have to inject all of those, or there's a bug in respec.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so let's just find out if there's a bug in respec, and if there is not, and that's the way it's going to be from now on, we're going to have to go through and mark all the sections normative or informative.
Yeah.
So should section 5 be informative or normative?
That was another comment which probably comes later in Sandra's list. And currently in the conformance section, we say that the only normative sections are the appendix, the grammar, and the HTTP link header. So those two sections are normative. And all the rest is at least according to the conformance section, not normative.
Could you go down the list again, Marcus, just so I can capture that in the minutes?
Sorry,
the only sections that are normative are
JSON-LD grammar, so the appendix, and interpreting JSON as JSON-LD, so the link header stuff.
Well, we do make normative statements, for instance, in section 6.8. We say an author must.
We shouldn't be that creeped in there, I think.
Yeah, 6.8 is exactly that section. It's the link header section. So that section plus the grammar section are the only two currently normative sections according to the conformance section.
Right. And what I recall having a discussion with Robin about sort of propagation of normativity is that it seemed very odd to have a normative section inside of an informative section. So section 6 is informative, but 6.8 is normative. One might say that was the comment chain that we got into when we were chasing down a bug.
Sure. I mean, I understand that viewpoint, but I don't think I think it can be viewed as kind of strange, but I don't think that it's not something that you shouldn't do. Right. And so specifically in the JSON-LD case, we have gone to pretty great lengths to make sure that there are very tight normative sections in the documents and that we don't make normative statements across the entire document. And that's to help implementers by just telling them these are the only two sections that are important from a normativity perspective.
So I'm fine with that. I would just say that we mark 6 specifically as being informative and then continue, and then mark 6.8 as being normative.
Yep.
Being unambiguous means we don't have to worry about if it's a bug in JSON or respec that may change in the future.
Yeah, I agree, and I think we might want to just mark every single section as informative somehow, either through respec or through manually.
I think the top-level specs should be. Once you're inside of an informative section, then I think the assumption is that you remain informative unless you say otherwise.
Right.
So I don't think 6.9 would need to say it's informative.
That's what I mean. I'm saying sections 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 should be marked as informative. That makes all their subsections informative. And I agree with you, section 6 should be marked as informative, and then section 6.8 specifically should be marked as normative.
Right, okay.
So
all top level sections should be marked as normative. And then grammar should be marked as normative as well. Conformance needs to be normative, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And those are the only sections that are normative.
What about the data model, for example? And the relationship to RDF?
Yeah, I think those are normative as well. Well, the relationship doesn't have to be, does it?
We have one must statement in there for, that data set versus graph syntax stuff.
Yeah, then it's normative, unless we can move that out in the grammar somehow, but I don't think it really belongs in the grammar, does it?
It's not even clear that it belongs here and that this isn't an RDF concept statement, right? Because it comes up again in trig. I think it's an RDF concept. The fact that a consumer must interpret, who is expecting a graph, must interpret a data set as being using the default graph. That is something that I believe should be in RDF concepts and not here. Otherwise, JSON-LD could say one thing, trig could say something different, and as a consumer, you'd really have no way of knowing what the generic behavior is.
They did move that, didn't they? Or maybe that was Turtle that they did that too.
Well, Turtle doesn't have data sets.
Okay, so I remember we had a discussion in the RDF working group where we pasted the text that was in this section to the group, and the group agreed that that's what they should do, but I forget which spec we were talking about at the time.
Well, let me look in RDF concepts quickly.
Okay, so let's assume
or
that...
Or did they just accept that we put that statement in?
I don't think so. No, it's a generic... It's something that's generic.
So until that statement is made in the RDF concepts, I think that section should be normative.
I don't think that's the right way to go about doing it. I think this is something that maybe to bring up tomorrow that we need to resolve that this is something in RDF concepts.
Okay.
Because I think that was what the sense of the group was.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll need to raise that in the RDF working group call tomorrow then. And then we can just leave that section as informative markets and then I guess remove
actually,
it once
the RDF
working group.
There's an issue in section 6 of the editor's draft of concepts anyway. That says, is it legitimate to content negotiate between RDF graph presentation and data set reputation that only contains the default graph? So I think it references issue 105, which is where this has been discussed. So it is referenced within that document, and I think we can safely feel that that's the place it should be dealt with. That allows us to make Appendix C normative or non-normative.
Okay. Okay, let's keep going down this Sandra's comments because we're running out of time.
Next section is compact RI 6.1, and there we have that safety mechanism, so that if there is a colon and then there are two slashes, then we don't consider that as a compact RI or query, but as an absolute RI. The question there is if we want to keep that safety mechanism or if we drop it, and if we keep it, apparently the two sentences are contradicting each other. I have to look that up.
No, if their terms are not interpreted as compact IRIs if they have, the first colon is, not followed by two slashes.
It's not, so Sandra is asking, do slashes prevent recognizing things as compact IRIs? No, that's not what the test is. The test is a colon immediately followed by //.
That causes it to be interpreted as an absolute IRI.
Right.
And this was really important in RDFA because we were just getting too much junk data generated in the case there was no prefix defined.
Right.
I mean, JSON-LD is subject to the same problem. So I think having the :// safety valve to say that it will not be interpreted as compact IRI if the colon that separates the prefix from the suffix, or if the suffix begins with two slashes.
Yeah.
Can you repeat the problem of RDFA? I think I misunderstood that. Correct.
Well, the problem is if you have a document and you use a query, but you fail to define the prefix, then what happens is you output absolute IRIs. You end up creating absolute IRIs for things that should have been expanded, except it was an error on the authoring side. So by putting in the // bit, we... Actually, it's the opposite version, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the opposite.
Yeah. If you defined HTTP.
Yeah, I thought
this was more about preventing HTTP from being a prefix.
I'm not sure if... I mean...
That was a problem.
That's really worth doing it.
Yeah, I think that someone had defined HTTP as a prefix, that was since changed. So maybe it doesn't really serve much of a use for us anymore.
Because, I mean, if you really redefine HTTP, almost every URL in your document will change. And if you don't notice that, then, well.
Well, I think that's why we did it, is because there is an HTTP vocabulary. There's an HTTP web vocabulary.
Didn't they change the prefix, though?
Yeah, to HT. But there's really just that single case, basically.
There's some other reasons we did it in RDFA 1.1.
Yeah, they changed it to just HT.
Well, the HT prefix isn't found. At least on prefix.cc. I have this uneasy feeling that we did this for another reason in RDFA. I can't think of what it was.
Unfortunately, you can't search the document for it because you find all the HTTP things.
That's right.
term or carry.
Wait a second. This is any dereferenceable IRI. So the FDP, IRC, all of those things would be protected with, by this. That's what it was. There were multiple schemes that used //, and we didn't want those to automatically be expanded to a term. If you use this on the right hand side, there's a possibility that it's going to be expanded incorrectly. Yeah, that's what it was. I don't think we should remove this. Because you don't want IRC colon, well, it is IRC colon //, right?
No.
Yeah, it's IRC colon //, it's FTP colon //.
It's every hierarchy chain.
Right, exactly. So this is a prevention against accidentally interpreting an actual hierarchical scheme IRI as a query. So I'm a big minus one in removing this.
Well, I mean, the same applies to non-hierarchical, and there you can't even see it.
Yeah, but there's nothing we can do for that case. If for this case, for hierarchical IRIs, there's something that we can do. For non-hierarchical IRIs, there's really nothing we can do.
And this is the far more common case as well.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
I think what we need to do here is just change the language so that we say that there's an additional exception or for suffixes or an additional restriction on suffixes that they cannot start with two slashes. Otherwise, it will not be interpreted as a query. That way, the sentences won't appear to contradict each other.
Yeah.
Is it valid to have two slashes in a URI?
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe I misunderstood the question.
Like somewhere in your path, can you have two slashes? So.
You can, but that's not what this is doing. It's saying a colon immediately followed by two slashes.
Yeah, at the beginning of the suffix. But that is a valid URI anyway, to answer your question. But this says prefixes are expanded when the form of the value is a compact IRI represented as prefix colon suffix combination. And so what we just need to change the following sentence that talks about the two slashes by saying there's a restriction on suffixes where they can't start with two slashes. Otherwise, it will not cause the value to be interpreted as a compact IRI.
So this wouldn't be possible anymore then, for example.
That's correct.
Right.
But it's a fairly contrived example. When would you need to do that in the real world?
No, I'm just trying to understand.
You're correct.
The only time that would really come up in the real world is if there was an application that was not, like, normalizing paths or something. I mean, it could happen, but they'll just have to deal with that because it's more important that we protect against this common case of misinterpretation.
Yeah, I'm fine either way. I mean, it's extra code, that's true, but probably it helps some people. So I don't really care what we do about this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm pretty strong in making sure that we keep this protection in there. Okay. Can we move on to the next one, example 17?
Yes. Example 17. So Sandra was wondering whether the order matters, but then. Well, he read, and later on he realized that the order doesn't matter, and it's covered well in section 6.9. But maybe we should cover that also in section, also for this particular examples, example 17. Well, I don't think we need to discuss it twice, and if you know Jason, you will know that it doesn't matter anyway, so...
I don't think it's going to be a very common reaction to get confused about this for most people. I think it's fine to mention it later, just once.
Yeah.
Great.
Yep. Okay.
So probably tick that off. Then the next one, that's about overloading of keywords. In this particular case, overloading of ad vocab if it's used in ad with in-type coercion. And Sandra proposes that we create a table where we show the different meanings of those keywords, depending on where they are used. So we say ad vocab in the context, and well, it's always in the context, but if you use ad vocab alone, it's to set the vocabulary, and if you use it in inside of ad type, we use it to change the value space of an IRI. I'm not sure about this one. I mean, a table, there are really just two cases.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty small table, I would think.
Yeah.
He does have a good point, I agree.
Maybe we just need some better language in there that makes it more obvious why ad vocab was chosen there and how it makes sense to that you're interpreting a value as sort of being part of your vocabulary. We could even mention that you could use it for enumerated types. I mean, we could better describe its use, and then it wouldn't seem so foreign, perhaps.
Yeah, I agree. I felt like we did this for ad type somewhere in the document, and if we can follow the same kind of thing for ad vocab, maybe we're good.
Yeah, this one is about section 6.5. The introduction there describes that.
I have to say, it's confusing.
So, well, I mean, I find it quite precise or quite easy to understand as well. We said that the difference between ad ID and ad type is how values are expanded to absolute IRIs. Ad vocab first tries to expand the value by interpreting as a term, etc. And values coerced to ad ID in contrast are expanded as compact IRI, absolute IRI, etc.
This is not something I remember, but I can, within a term definition, say ad ID is ad vocab.
No, you can.
No, you can do ad type.
Definition, you do ad type.
Or ad type is ad vocab. That's a feature I don't remember adding.
Yeah, that's what we added to resolve the getting enumerated types effectively into documents, so that you could put a term on the right hand side and have it be interpreted.
Yeah.
So the way of saying this value should be interpreted as effectively part of your vocabulary.
It was mainly added for compaction, if I remember correctly. So instead of compacting back to a relative IRI, you compact back to a term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it removed ambiguity in that case as well.
No, I can understand the value of it. Maybe we just need a little bit of an explanation that, you know, vocab serves two purposes.
Yeah, we should do that and say that they're both related to vocabulary so that people can see why it was reused.
Right. Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch. The explanation is a bit of a stretch, but I think it does make sense once you do the explanation. We just need to explain it a little better, I feel.
Maybe it would become clearer. No, that's also not that simple. We have that default vocabulary section where we describe it vocab. Maybe we could describe that feature there as well, but we didn't introduce type coercion yet at that point.
Well, maybe we just need an example that uses this.
Yeah, I think we should definitely have an example. And it would be helpful to people too, because they're going to want to use enumerated types. People use them, and it will show them how to.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. We have no example for this.
Yeah. Okay. So let's add an example. I mean, this is all boiling down to we need to explain it a little better, and so maybe having an example and having a little paragraph explaining how it's used in this specific scenario would make it less confusing. Okay, do we need to discuss this anymore before moving on to the next one?
I don't think so.
Okay.
The next point is we have that note or that, yeah, we have a note in the spec where we say it is best practice to put the context at the top of a document. And Sandra says that this goes against the best practice to building JSON documents by just using a JSON serializer, and JSON serializer you normally can't influence the order in which it gets serialized. So, I mean, that's true for some serializers, but certainly not for all, and I think a lot of JSON documents will be generated by using templates, for example. And I mean, it's just the best practice in a node, so I would definitely like to keep this node because it makes reading documents for humans way, way simpler.
Can we mention at least that we realize that some serializers don't let you do that, and oh well, do we have a way of saying that?
Well, I mean, it's just the best practice. If you don't do it, nothing.
Yeah, but the absence of us acknowledging that JSON serializers don't let you do that, I can see how people would find that frustrating and say, well, I can't comply with best practice in this document.
Yep. Yeah, we should
okay.
say something. I think we should say something about it. And it just needs to be one sentence saying that some JSON-LD serializers do not allow you to specify the order, and in those cases, that document will still be a valid JSON-LD document, something along those lines.
Yeah, in the case of Ruby 1.8.7, I needed to create a subclass of hash to keep the keys ordered, because typically, that's what, if you have a hash type, that's what you're likely to use to represent this. And it's simply a matter of serializing the hash. So it's not so much that the serializer doesn't support it, it's that the data model that the serializer operates on doesn't necessarily support it. It can be done, like I said, but it was a pain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to dropping all support for Ruby 1.8 sometime.
Yeah, in JavaScript you have to rewrite the hash effectively, rewrite the object just to reorder the keys.
Yeah.
So it's doable in major programming languages. I wonder if we should even say that. Probably not.
So
maybe instead of saying it's a best practice, you just say, when possible, it's useful to maintain the specified order, but it is not required for conformance for compatibility.
Yeah, I agree.
What if we say if documents are intended for humans, it is considered best practice to put the context at the top?
Not just humans, but streaming processors as well.
Maybe just go with when possible.
Let's just kind of do the when possible hand waving.
How about when possible it's best practice?
All right.
Or the other way around, it's a best practice when it's possible.
Let's just do possible and skip. I mean, it's just...
Just skip back best practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not really gaining much by using that specific term. So just say when possible.
So what, when possible? When possible, do put the context at the top or what?
Yeah, yes.
It's not just that, right? It's probably ordering keywords before other properties. I implement a special sort evaluator for that purpose in order to try to get all of the keywords showing up before the properties do.
Yeah, so I guess we can just say, when possible, put the context first, followed by any other JSON-LD keywords. However, if you can't do it, that's fine.
I think if you simply lexically sort the keywords, context comes first.
Well, that's probably true.
I don't think we have any A or B.
Yeah, that's true. But that's a bit weird to say. Output the JSON object with sorted keys.
Yeah, I don't think it's important that we say that they're sorted.
Yeah.
I think it's important that we say the context is first and then put the other JSON-LD keys there. People can figure out to sort them on their own if they want to. They'll see documents that look like that.
Well, all of our examples are that way.
Right.
What if we do nothing and wait till Sandra really complains again?
I think it would be good to change it because I can see other people. It's a pedantic argument, but I can see other people raising it, and that just eats up. We're just going to have another conversation like this when that happens.
Yeah, I just think at a minimum we change it to when possible, and we should probably mention that it's okay if you don't do it.
Yeah, put what Dave suggested in the IRC channel, and I think that's fairly, not that exact phrase, but something that kind of follows it. When possible, put the context first, then other JSON-LD keywords next, then properties.
And if you don't, you're still okay.
Lexically ordered?
We shouldn't go that far just because it might be confusing to people why they have to sort their keys, and it's not that important. What is important is the context first, then the JSON-LD keywords, then the properties. Lexicographically sorting them is an optimization, or it's something that makes it, it's a neat trick that makes the right thing happen, but without explaining why that neat trick works, it might be confusing to people to put it in the spec. What's the next one here? Oh, well-known host context JSON-LD. Big minus one to that idea. Oops.
I'm also against that. So it's, I think that one had to do with the link header, HTTP link header. And he said that, well, probably it would make sense to have another mechanism. So if there isn't a link header, you could fall back to that well-known URL and look there. But I think we shouldn't do that for a number of reasons.
Great.
Do we need to discuss that further, or should I continue?
No, minus one.
Let's tick it off, I think. The next one is, we say to avoid forward compatibility issues, a term should not start with an at character. And the question there is, and that's a longer discussion, we also had a longer discussion about that, so whether should not is enough or it should be and must not, and what happens if someone uses that nevertheless.
I think should not is strong enough. There's a question on how do we extend the language, and I think that in order to extend the language, you have to be able to put at something in there. I mean, the other option is this whole, like, you know, prefixing, x-prefixing, or the, you know, the product name dash prefixing, and that has been shown to be a bad idea in HTML, CSS specifically. So I think we should allow people to use at something, and they should know that if they use the at something and they don't try and standardize it, that they could be stomped on later on. But I think that's what the should not is trying to say. It's trying to provide a balance between these two things. It's saying if you want to extend JSON-LD, you can use at keywords, you know, so long as make sure that you do something to standardize on them. Or if you want to make your own extension, then don't use an at keyword. Just use something that's specific to your application, like plus or something like that. But I think that saying must not goes too far.
The problem Sandro mentioned in his last comment a couple of days ago was that if we don't say must not, some people might go and create some extensions, and some of them might get popular, and there might be some incompatible things that use the same keyword but are doing different things, for example, and then we need to pick one, or, you know, there's no...
That would be a great situation.
We could also create a registry. We could create a registry.
People did that.
We could create a registry that allowed a place for keywords to be sort of reserved in a process by which that's updated.
Yep. Or if we see something happening out in the wild, we just go ahead and reserve that term.
On the other hand, if we don't enforce it in the algorithms, a must not wouldn't do any harm, in my opinion. But yeah, I mean, you can still do it, but you know, really shouldn't.
I'm concerned if I start using ordered instead of list, and then I have my own note on how ordered is done. It's treated exactly like a list, except for the RDF serialization. I would be violating the spec to do that, and that just seems that's not what we want to do, particularly as I think we expect that there's going to be many other extensions to this over time. So providing some way to do that and having a registry, a keyword registry, allows us to be specific about what keywords how would that work? Yeah, I would basically say it's you must not use keywords that are not within the registry.
But if you have a registry, then they are registered keywords. They are not non-registered keywords anymore. And
that's right. And so then non-registered keywords are ill, must not use non-registered keywords. But the interpretation of those keywords may be defined in other specifications. So the registry would need to also point to where it's defined.
There are two questions here. Do we mention the registry in the spec?
I don't think we need to create the registry now.
Well, I mean, a little registry is just a simple document that sits on the web server, right? And then if someone wants to add an extension or we see an extension, we add it to that document. It's just an HTML file. It doesn't have
to be. Who decides? I mean, that's the same all the time, but who decides which keywords go in and which don't? You know,
the keywords are kind of precious.
Well, the group decides, like we're doing now for the defined RDFA prefixes. There's a separate document, context document for that, which is updated infrequently. And there's a process by which we decide how to update it.
I've got a comment here. Hold on. If we were to put must not in the spec, who in here thinks that we should enforce that with the processor so that it actually throws an error if you do it?
I think it would be perfectly reasonable to have the processor implement that. Because you're saying must not, you should kick out an error in that case.
Yeah, because what I was thinking, if we said must not and we didn't put the error in, and we didn't throw an error, then people who actually come in and read the spec are if they go in, they're going to go in and put keywords in there that they invent anyway if we don't throw an error. So it's not going to matter whether or not we say must not or should not.
I can imagine someone suggesting that we should have a negative syntax test. We should have negative syntax tests, and that a reasonable negative syntax test is to have a document that uses some other, some non-defined keyword or some with the form of a keyword, and it should be tested to be invalid. Otherwise,
right,
you shouldn't make a normative statement.
And then what's going to After that, what people will do, if we implement that, what people will do if they want to extend the language is they'll just pick some other way of doing the exact same thing. And I don't know how much it's really buying us for if people go out and make these popular features. First of all, I think if one of these features gets popular, I really don't envision a situation where two people pick the same name for very different features that are just as popular as one another. It seems unlikely to happen, but in either case, we're going to have to pick one of these terms and standardize on it. It would be better if at least some of the documents already were compliant.
I think it's exactly the same problem as prefixes. If you know someone might define, I mean, for instance, schema.org stepped on schema. That's, you can imagine other people would want to use that. Yeah, I think that might happen with keywords. I think the only way to save ourselves from that is to have some form of a registry that defines what the acceptable keywords to appear in a document are and a process by which it's updated.
Right, but what I'm saying at this point is schema is now taken. I mean, that's...
Well, it is, but there's been a problem with people trying to use the same prefix. And to the degree that, well, DC, what does DC mean? It's even the same group.
Yeah.
Hold on. So, Greg, are you saying that this registry should be something that the processors suck in and then kick out errors if a keyword is not in the registry?
Well, that's sort of the way it's defined in RDFA. In practice, you know, my processor, and I think many others, sort of cook that in. Because it's updated infrequently, it's easy to know when to change it. So I don't actually have to dereference the registry at runtime.
So
but that's
can edit.
It's like the initial context of RDFA.
Can changes be made to the registry?
Yes.
If somebody claims DC,
There's a process we define to do that, which we're going through now. For instance, to add DC 1.1 as a prefix, as well as a couple of others.
Well, what I'm asking is, if someone has already claimed DC, can you go in and change it later in the registry?
Can you take a prefix that was
previously registered and change it to point somewhere else?
I think that would be a bad idea.
Then I don't really understand how this is that much better over the situation where there is no registry. And it's still whoever comes in and grabs it first.
You can't just implement some extension and claim conformance
unless you have staked that out and it's in the registry. Otherwise, it is, you know, any other process that encounters it must raise an error.
Greg, I feel that making a requirement that the processor has to effectively, I think it's a bit heavyweight. I think having a registry, I'm fine with having a registry. I think that's a good idea, and we should just point people to the registry if they want to do extensions and say just register your extension before you start working on it or once you are going to deploy it in some software. But saying that all processors are now required to download the registry and enforce it, I feel is a little too heavyweight. I don't think it's going to be such a big problem that we should put that burden on implementers. Because some implementers are going to want to do it the right way, which is go out and fetch the registry, parse the data, and then, you know, preload your JSON-LD processor with the keywords that it's allowed to use. That's like, that seems like overkill to me.
Then it comes back to that we should not have wording in there about must not.
Right, exactly. So let's just leave it at should not, and then that allows us to create a registry, and then there are two mechanisms, or at least there are two mechanisms that tell people, look, you're doing something that's kind of dangerous. There's should not language in the spec, and there is a registry that says, look, register your keywords if you're going to extend JSON-LD.
Right.
And the upside for that is that we don't make processor implementations, you know, have to fetch this extra document every time they start up or every, you know, X 50 months.
I still actually am a little bit against the idea of a registry because I would prefer the best feature to win rather than the first person who claims the name gets to win. I don't think it's solving the problem that lots of people want to use schema as a prefix, for instance, by having a registry. What just might end up happening is some really useless feature goes in and grabs that name, and then no one can use it. I would prefer that the feature that is the most useful and the most that gets the most adoption is the one that gets to use the keyword or the prefix. And that seems like a better way to approach the problem. It also avoids issues, you know, like domain squatters. I don't know what protections we're going to have on this registry, but if it's a popular thing, who's to say there won't be people to go in and claim keywords?
Well,
you could
and then
say
don't
that
use them.
We could say to get in the registry, you have to write a spec. But even then, that's kind of problematic because that favors spec writers over.
Yeah, and it all seems to sort of make it difficult to actually extend the language, and it doesn't seem to prefer the people that create the features that people start adopting. I think that it's going to sort itself out, and it would be better to let it sort itself out and deal with the conflicts that arise from that than to restrict it so strongly, which might produce worse effects.
Well, I suppose the other way to do it would be to allow a way to claim a keyword within a context so that you could define a keyword that can be used within documents that include that context. And that allows the same keyword to be used in different documents, but not conflict. I mean, if, for instance, if the definition within the context also included a dereferenceable location that defines the semantics of that keyword, that would be very much like the extensibility model with HTTP.
Wait, could you say that again, Greg? What?
So one of the principles of the web that I, as I understand it, is that you must be able to follow your nose to find a specification. So if I have a content type, I can use that content type in order to find the specs that describe how to use that content type. In that case, there is a registry. If we had a way of having some syntax used within a context that said, this is a additional keyword that's being used, and the specification for how that keyword, what the semantics of using the keyword are
represented using this IRI, that would be a way of providing some extensibility without having to worry about two different uses of the same keyword that reference two different specifications being confused with each other.
Another option would be to allow dual entries in the registry. So if somebody claims at schema, you can have three different pointers to three different implementations or three different specs until one of them ends up becoming the rec.
I don't see what's useful about having the registry that then.
All of the extensions for JSON-LD. You can go to one location and see all of the extensions that have been done for JSON-LD.
To Greg's point, we could make it so that you have to define extra keywords in the context and point them at an IRI. We would just have to change the processing rules to not output triples and things from that.
Yeah.
That's true. That's a possibility. So you define a term in the context, and then it would be pointed to some IRI, and then the processor would allow that kind of...
The processor would just probably have to ignore it if it doesn't know what it means, otherwise it can do something with it.
Right. And being in the context allows the keyword to be used. So if you have a term which is of the form of a keyword, and must not be a registered keyword defined within a specification, and its value has an ID which points to some location that defines that, and its type is, for instance, at keyword. Maybe it doesn't even need a type.
Although then applications that didn't support that might end up expanding that keyword into the actual IRI as a property, might interpret it as a property. We'd have to have rules.
We would have to make JSON-LD processors know what that means. So if you use the at character at the beginning of a term, it means you're defining a keyword. And if you're defining a keyword, then the processor needs to ignore it and just let it pass through.
It does feel a little bit like magic, and it might be useful to have a type of keyword.
Okay, well, we could also do that. And the other thing that we could do is think of the other keywords as if they did the same thing, but they all had default values, so that if we standardize in the future, you can, if you don't put that keyword definition in there, then it falls back to the default.
Right.
This seems like a lot of work for two words in a spec. Must not versus should not. I don't think.
Well, what we're doing is we're providing an extensibility model, which I think is pretty powerful.
Well, I mean, I think the other extensibility model is almost as powerful, and we don't have to do anything to the processors.
Go ahead.
Well, basically not having registry and just saying you should not use at keywords is good enough.
Well, then we have there is no extensibility model.
Well, the extensibility model is coordinate with the JSON-LD community group, right? And if you don't, then it's no big deal, but, you know, we might stomp on your keyword later on.
Well, the other problem, Manu, is that the keywords will be dropped when you run it through a processor.
Right.
Yeah, but I think the key here is that if something is not a defined keyword, it's just a term like everything else. And if you could introduce special handling for specific terms, it doesn't matter if they start with at or not in a proprietary processor. But unless we update the JSON-LD specification, no compliant processor would be able to make, or no interoperable compliant JSON-LD processor would do the same thing. So I mean, in any case, we need to update the specification because the algorithms are written in a way to drop things that are neither keywords nor expand to an absolute IRI. So I think all we need to do here is just to make clear that it's a bad idea, because that might change in the future, but at the moment they are just ignored as other terms which don't map to a keyword or to a defined keyword or an absolute IRI.
Yeah,
it's true that if there's a processor out there that understands the keyword, it can preserve it in the output for these things that get extended. So we don't necessarily have to put that into. I guess there's this issue where people say it's non-conformant, but I guess that's true. But that's what you're doing to try and extend the language.
But it's not non-conformant. It's perfectly conformant.
Meaning
that it's not breaking
any
rules. It
that's true.
Mean, if it was must not, it would be non-conformant, but should not doesn't mean it's non-conformant.
Well, I was just saying if they don't even put anything defining the keywords that they use into their context, is it conformant to not drop? I mean, if they ran it through through the API, you're supposed to drop those things.
Yeah, it'll drop.
Well,
they can extend their API to any other processor would drop it, but their API would not drop it.
And that's why I'm saying, would they no longer be conformant because they're not dropping it?
No, I think it's perfectly conformant to do that. You can always do things above and beyond what a JSON LD processor does. There are two answers to that. One of them is that you could argue that it's non-conformant because it's extending the specification and doing more, but I don't think that that's a very good interpretation. That's not a very useful interpretation of the spec. We want people to be able to extend the spec. So we're specifically lax in certain ways, such as the must not versus should not for terms starting with that. So we're trying to give people a little bit of flexibility to innovate as they need to, and then if they find the feature useful, they would bring it to the JSON-LD group, and then we'd try to make it into a node or an extension to the spec. I think the worst thing we could do is prevent that kind of ad hoc innovation. And so if we do restricting things that start with app, we are preventing this ad hoc innovation from happening.
In a sense, it's the same as HTML's extensibility mechanism. Every tag that it's not recognized, it's just ignored. So you have valid HTML 1.0, but also HTML 5 is still valid. I mean, it's just that most parts are just ignored.
Yeah, and that's really important. Like, I mean, for example, if you've ever used Angular extends the hell out of HTML. I mean, they have all kinds of attributes and even elements, I think, that you can use that are completely not, it's not in the HTML spec at all, but because HTML5 allowed you to do that kind of stuff, you have this really powerful kind of extension to the HTML language as a result. So I agree with Marcus that we want the same kind of thing for JSON-LD.
Yeah, I think we just need to be careful in the API spec. Yeah, well, I'll just say we need to be careful to say that in the API spec that you can leave things there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, I had a hard stop 15 minutes ago. I really need to go. You guys are welcome to keep talking, but we are 15 minutes over our 90-minute call, so maybe we should stop here.
Okay.
Thanks, guys, for the very good in-depth call, and we'll continue with these issues next week. Okay, have a good week.
Okay.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.